All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn and Dave.
And me.
And Dave. And Dave's on video today, so yeah. You guys get to see Dave's glorious, shining, happy face. John is not going to be with us today. He's also not going to be here next week. He's got some other commitments he's got to take care of, so just going to be me and Dave. Well, actually, it's not going to be me and Dave next week. We have a guest next week.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about that.
All right.
We'll get to that, you know, when we get to that. Okay. So, excuse me. Remember Everyone Deployed, we have some interesting things to talk about with that as well. We always say that on the show, right? Remember Everyone Deployed, and we talk about how we've still got people overseas and all that. Well, here's kind of an interesting death that happened recently in service. I'm going to pull it up here. A Green Beret actually got strangled to death and killed by two SEALs. After he turned down some illegal money. This is all reportedly, right? Staff Sergeant Logan Melger back in June in Mali.
Just getting out.
So they were they were pocketing money intended for informants. You know, it's interesting when you think about the kind of money often that that military folks are given to go pay off informants, pay chiefs, pay village leaders, village elders, stuff like that, for typically to pay them for information. It's sometimes a lot. I mean, I know guys who in various Iraqistan deployments were carrying around a significant amount of cash to pay people off. And it would be relatively easy to make that stuff disappear. Well, apparently this guy had some scruples and said no thanks. And these guys didn't want to get caught, these two SEALs. And so they were both from SEAL Team 6, the elite dev crew, and he found out what they were doing. They tried to pay him off. He said no and told his wife. Anyway, they apparently killed him.
Damn.
So
they name drop anybody?
Suspicions were raised after two SEALs alleged Melger was participating in combative exercises, which is basically, you know, military fighting, while drunk, and that you know, they accidentally choked him to death.
Accidentally.
And so he's with third group, and apparently not so. They did the autopsy, no drugs, no alcohol in his system, and there was, you know, obvious signs of the fact that he was resisting and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's sad that I got to bring this up, but it's important if you're listening out there and you're in the service, and that includes any uniformed service, all right? Law enforcement, military, whatever it may be. Remember, just because somebody got through a strenuous selection process, or even if they're just enlisted or they're just wearing a uniform, doesn't mean that there's not a little bit of shitbag hiding somewhere in them. So I'm not saying that obviously most people in uniform are bad. That is absolutely not what I'm saying. I'm saying there's a very, very small percentage of people who manage to slip through the cracks and make poor choices. Just watch yourself, right? Sometimes that violence comes from within and not only from the outside. So just
sometimes that makes it worse.
Keep that in mind. It does make it worse. In this case, it does make it worse.
Yeah.
We lost a Border Patrol agent in Texas.
Good old Tejas.
Got killed on Sunday morning, or died on Sunday morning, I should say.
Yeah.
I'm not going to maybe say this right. Rogelio Martinez. I'm guessing it's Rogelio. And his partner were responding to activity while on border in the Big Bend sector. And they got engaged. Custom officials aren't saying what kind of activity they were responding to. Anyway, he got killed. And his partner got hurt pretty bad, so he's still in recovery. So we don't just remember those who are deployed. We've got other people in uniform as well who have to deal with very serious threats here in our country. And oftentimes we look at our military and go, oh, they're heroes. They're going overseas and they're, you know, fighting the good fight and they're doing their business. And they are for the most part. And I'm not saying everyone in the military is a hero. We've talked about that kind of stuff on the show before, but definitely, you know, it's easy to remember our troops, but it's not as always easy to remember those in law enforcement who are doing it every single day. They're not just doing it on a deployment every now and then. They are doing it every single day.
Yeah.
And on that same note, we lost a law enforcement officer up in PA, up in Pennsylvania. 25-year-old officer Brian Shaw.
Brian Shaw.
Killed during a traffic stop. So got involved in the shooting with a suspect who's still on the loose. Manhunt currently going on. I hope they catch him, and I hope he chooses to die from suicide by cop. So I hope they get their due diligence. You know, it's interesting because I was listening to the news this morning, which isn't too common, but I had to go in and have a freaking tire fix this morning. And so I'm listening to the news because I don't have anything else to do while I was waiting. And they were talking about this whole situation. And I'm listening to it, and the chief comes on. He's like, to the suspect, you know, we will find you, and we will hold you accountable before a court of law. And I'm just like, this is part of the problem with our society. Because what he needs to say is, hey, you shitbag, we find you, you're fucking dead.
Yep.
There's nowhere you can run. There's nowhere you can hide. We're calling all the dogs in. We're calling all the people in. Turn yourself in, we'll kill you quick. Turn yourself, or we have to find you, we're going to kill you slow. Really important that you understand this. You know. Because that's what that chief really wanted to say.
Yeah.
And that's what this guy, you know, Officer Brian Shaw, that's what his partners, that's what his brothers, that's what his sisters, that's what his people who are in uniform with, that's what they want to say.
Oh, yeah. That's what they want to do.
We got to be so politically correct. Yep. Our justice system is so broken in that way. This is some shitbag. I'm not even going to justify naming his name. He's just a shitbag.
Yep.
He's a piece of junk. No one cares about him. He comes from nothing. And he's going to go to nothing.
Yep.
It's like, for example, here's another interesting piece of news that happened. Charles Manson finally died at 83 in prison. Why is he still alive?
Yeah, no
right.
Shit.
When I heard on the news he had died, I'm like, why is he still alive? When did that crime happen? In 1969 or something like that? What was it?
Because they have to try him fairly.
In the 60s sometime.
Has to be fair.
I mean, unbelievable, right? Totally unbelievable that he's even still alive. This is how broken our system is. We're so broken that our worst of the worst are dying in prison. Not by our hand.
No.
Right? Oh, not reformable. This guy who killed this cop, he's not reformable. Find him, kill him, kick him in a ditch. John Doe, who cares about what his name is? He's nothing. He comes from nothing, he'll go to nothing.
I used to have an idea for inmates like that, but it don't ever happen because it's not politically correct.
You mean medical testing?
No, not necessarily.
Live fire testing?
No. So you stick them in a room every day. They get a choice because they made choices to take another life and do some fucked up shit. Or messed up stuff, sorry.
It's too late, you already said it. Nice try, though.
Stick them in a room, give them 3 buttons. One button will kill them, 2 buttons will not. And it'll gas the whole room. And it's just a gas chamber by choice. So every day, you have to go into that room and you have to pick a button. Eventually, you're going to pick the wrong button. But it's a mental, just, you know what time is coming. You know the next day.
That's like some kind of weird torture stuff, man.
Yeah.
That's like some Jigsaw, what's those movies called?
Saw.
Saw.
Yeah.
It's some weird Jigsaw freaking messed up stuff, dude.
I love it.
It'd
be,
oh my God.
It'd be awesome. That's what those kind of people deserve.
Oh,
just mess with their head.
I won't disagree with that. But that's the issue. I mean, we have I'm not saying that all criminals are beyond reform. But certain violent criminals are. If you're willing to kill cops over traffic stops, if you're willing to – these SEALs, if you're willing to choke out a former Green Beret – I mean a current Green Beret, I mean a current brother-in-arms because you get caught doing some shitty things.
Yeah.
They should just take those dudes out back, put a bullet in each head, plap, and call it a day. Mm-hmm. Sorry, man. And whatever their service record was, whatever they did is fine. I'm not saying erase that. The guys may have performed honorably in the past. Fine, so be it. I'm not saying we shit on their names or anything like that. But we just give them due justice. That's all. Hey, you guys did this. You messed up big time. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take you out back, and we're going to hang you.
Yep.
We're gonna shoot you in the head, and then we're going to hang you, and we're going to let everybody remember that this is what happens. This is what happens. If you want to do this blue-on-blue violence crap,
yep,
this is a no-go.
Problem is everybody thinks...
or green-on-green in this case.
Yeah. Everybody thinks, oh, well, you know, you get caught. He just didn't know any better, or we got to give him a chance because he hasn't done bad things in the past, or he's done bad things, and maybe he just made the wrong decision this time, or... Whatever, I don't know.
But when your decisions start affecting the liberty of others, that's the problem. If you make bad choices that are like, I stole some crap, okay, you're probably not beyond reform, and let's see if we can fix you. You know, I did something bad. I hurt someone a little. You know, I hit somebody. I beat someone up or something. Okay, I murdered people. You raped people. You did terrible things like that. I'm sorry, you're beyond reform. You don't have a place in our society. It's time to start cleansing the gene pool because we see time and time and time again these people get released and all they do is go back to what they were doing. Yeah. What purpose did Charles Manson serve in prison for the last Yeah. 50 years, none, zero, not zilch. Like that people wrote books about him. They glorified him. People talked about him. Just let him die and be done with it. Just like this guy who killed this cop or those two SEALs. Just let him die and be done with it. Just kill him and be done with it. You know, that whoever we catch the guy who killed that Border Patrol agent, just kill him and be done with it. Forget who they were. Don't mention their names. Don't bring it up in the news. Nope. I don't care what their childhood was like. The only reason I would care about doing any research is that law enforcement organizations and military organizations need to research that so they can figure out what creates situations that cause people to do this kind of stuff.
How to fix it.
Other than that, and as civilians, we need to know so we know what we're looking for. But outside of that, I don't care about them. I don't care what their names are. I don't really care where they came from. I don't want to hear a statement from their parents. I don't give a damn. Just kill them and get it over with. They're terrible people. They've done terrible things. Move on. But we won't ever do that. We as a society are pussified when it comes to violence and doing what actually needs to be done to survive. You see it more and more every day. Incredibly frustrating. It's kind of what we're going to be talking about today, by the way.
Kind
of. Also, I'm going to have you do this, Dave. Let's go ahead and put our new patches game in. Woo! Yes! And Dave's going to put it up on the video so you guys can all see it. It looks pretty good. Nobody cares. Work harder. It is a raised PVC 3D patch. It's nice, right? You can see actual size compared to my big head. There it is. All right. It's a nice little rectangular patch. Nobody cares. Work harder. It has our thearmsroom.com URL on it. You got them up on the store, right?
Yep.
So they're up on the Independence Training Square store. If you go to independencetraining.com or easier, go to trainingaz.com and check out our online store. Go to patches. Bam. They're there.
There they are.
They're ready for you.
Yep.
Buy them. They're awesome. I've been handing a few out over the weekend for training and stuff. People love them so far.
Dude, they're awesome.
I'm loving it. I'm really liking it. It was a long time coming for the Arms Room to finally get our own patch, and now we got it. I'm excited. Came from Overwatch Designs.
Yep.
Overwatch Designs, who makes all of our cool stuff.
They do.
They make our patches. They make our decals. They make John's patches and decals. They make patches and decals for a lot of different companies. And you get 15% off from any order from Overwatch Designs by using the code THEARMSROOM, all lowercase.
They're on top of it.
Do it.
That's for sure.
Do it and get a cool discount from Overwatch. Gotta mention our Patreon. Patreon is moving up and onward, so that's great. Thanks to all the patrons who are getting involved with the show right now. Dave has put up a couple of polls.
Yep.
Excuse me, for the $10 and above patrons, and that is to figure out when you want us to do our extra show that is for $10 and above patrons only, and also what your mailing address is as a $10 and above patron so that we can send you a cool swag pack of some cool gear. Make sure that you respond to that so that you can get the stuff that we want to ship you and so that we can figure out the right time and day that works for you guys so that we can do the extra show that's just going to be for you. We're finalizing details on some of the other things we're going to do for the other levels as well. But right now, we're really focused on making sure we come through with these obligations that we promised, and we're going to definitely come through with them. So make sure you do that. We still have room for show ideas. So if you have some show ideas as a patron, that's the only people we're taking show ideas from now is just patrons, not just any listener. We've always done that in the past, but now we want to focus on just our patrons and their show ideas. We still have room. And you know, today's show, next week's show, et cetera, all from patrons. Last week's show, the show before that, we're really serious about taking care of our patrons. So if you want to get involved, go to patreon.com and check out The Arms Room. And you can always go to The Arms Room Facebook page and check out our Patreon links and accounts there as well. I got to mention this awesome hat that's sitting on our desk here. The Make Somalia Great Again hat was a gift to me from a friend and client of Independence Training who thought it was pretty damn funny just based on some conversations and experiences of our instructor staff. So, pretty awesome. So that's going to be a regular. I'm going to wear it at a training event. I'm not sure which one. Maybe the Black Friday event or something. And speaking of which, we got our Black Friday event coming up this Friday. We still have, I think, 5 slots left in the class.
Yep.
It's you can sign up on the online store on trainingaz.com. It is UTM sparring this year.
It's going to be awesome.
Carbine and handgun. You're going to have an opportunity to pit your skills against other humans in buildings, around vehicles, and out in the open. Mm-hmm. So do not miss this opportunity. If
you're going to get shot.
Got some opportunity to come out, you're going to shoot some people, you're going to get shot. It's going to be a good time. Just like we had in our class this last weekend, close contact handgun that we teach with Cecil Birch from Immediate Action Combatives. Phenomenal class. Some people got murdered.
Oh, yeah.
Some people prevented getting murdered.
Some
people got repeatedly murdered. It was a great learning opportunity for everybody. You know, we put scenarios together that are as realistic as we can possibly make them. We don't put scenarios together like, oh, this is fantastical. You know, you're getting jumped by five guys. Like that's to us isn't necessarily realistic. Possible, but not probable. So we work in buildings. We work around vehicles. We work out in the open. We show people how to handle verbals, movement, where our hands are, close quarters shooting, all those things. A lot of good lessons learned in the shoot house, especially. A lot of good lessons learned around the vehicles. A lot of good lessons learned overall. There is no steeper learning curve than force on force. You want to find out more about that? Take our close contact handgun class, our entangled handgun class, or our UTM sparring, which is coming up Black Friday. And if it's successful on Friday, we're probably going to do that class more often, which I would like to.
It'd be awesome.
I think UTM is a phenomenal opportunity for people to really learn.
I don't think I've ever heard any negative feedback every time we've done it.
No, people love it.
It's fun.
Even when they get shot, they love it.
Oh, yeah.
So did our annual shotgun class this past weekend. Yep. As usual, Sunday. Hardly any students showed up. But we did have some great students, and they came out. And what's interesting about the shotgun class, we've talked about shotguns on the show before, but everyone just thinks, oh, the shotgun is so simple. It's so easy. You know, sometimes I just want to video the whole class and just post the whole damn thing, because at the end, students are always like, holy crap, I didn't know that about the shotgun.
Yeah.
We had four people running 12-gauge shotguns. Every single shotgun was different. You know, we had a Mossberg 930. We had a Benelli M4. We had basically a Mossberg 500. In fact, we had two Mossberg 500s, and then we had a Remington 870. So just a huge gamut of guns that are all essentially run the same as far as put shells in, pull trigger.
Yep.
But outside of that, all run differently. Different sights, different side saddles, different options on the gun, different types of stocks. Everything was different about every single one of these guns. And it made operation manipulation of the gun differently, loading differently, accuracy differently. We had people making, you know, 75-yard, easy 75-yard high center chest hits with slugs on a torso target. I mean, they're just not the kind of thing that people think you can do with shotguns, you know. And in that class, we've taken people out beyond 100 before. It just happened to be in this class, we went to 75. But a lot of learning done with the shotgun, man. If you missed out, sorry, you're not going to get it again until like next year.
Next year.
We teach typically 6 to 8 shotgun classes a year, but only one open enrollment. The rest of them are all either government or private. We have like two more scheduled for this year, but all private. So people are still interested in the shotgun, but for some reason, it's just not as much. So anyway. All right. We are going to move on to I guess we don't really have John in here to do a Redwire gear moment. So I'm gonna do it for him. Here's a Redwire gear moment.
Do it.
Courtesy of Redwire gear via me. All right. Make sure that you truly understand how your personal selection of self-defense ammunition is going to perform. You know, when we do shotguns, and since we just did shotgun this last weekend, it's interesting. When we do close contact handgun, it's interesting. When you hear about people's ideas about how terminal ballistics work, when we put these things that we buy and use to put in soft bodies, but we don't train to put them in soft bodies. Right, we put them on steel targets, we put them in cardboard.
Yeah.
How often do you take the opportunity and the expense? You can buy ballistic gelatin. It's a start. Shoot through various materials into ballistic gelatin. Shoot through clothes with your carry load. See what happens. Shoot through wall segments. This is stuff you can set up yourself. It's not hard. Go buy a car door from your local, you know, you pick it type place. Like, go to you pick it. Take a car door.
Yeah.
Take a car panel. Shoot through it and see what happens. It's not going to be a perfect test, but it's going to give you a good idea of what your round does. If you have an opportunity, shoot through some window glass. Look, we do it all the time because we have to for training events. Mm-hmm. We buy junk cars from towing companies and from impound yards for anywhere from $200 to $300. We've got them as cheap as $100.
Yeah.
We're not like special because we're a training company. They'll sell to anybody for a couple $100.
Yeah, they don't care.
Buy a car for a couple $100. Have it towed out to your shooting location, arrange wherever you think you can arrange, if possible. I know this isn't possible for anybody, but if it's possible for you, do this. Get that vehicle out there. Shoot it. Shoot through the glass. Put targets in there. Shoot into the auto glass. Shoot targets on the outside and shoot from the inside outside. Be safe. Wear the appropriate safety gear. Shoot through side windows. Shoot through side windows when you're sitting in the seat and shoot out of it. Give yourself lots of distance when you do that. You know, shoot stuff in the vehicle, shoot through the vehicle, shoot down at an angle, shoot straight through, shoot through those magical A pillars that everyone talks about these days that don't really stop that much. All right. Line things up on the trunk, line things up on the hood, shoot stuff into the engine compartment. See what happens when you skip rounds off the hood. These all, I mean, you can spend a whole day just playing with a car. That's going to be a couple $100 well spent. Get a couple of your buddies. Y'all throw in, you know, $50. You'll learn a lot. Use your carry ammo when you're doing this. That's going to cost you a little bit, but it'll be worth it. Throw some ballistic gel in the vehicle and shoot into it. What's that going
to
be like?
Probably a good idea to find out what you're carrying, it does.
What's that actually going to do?
Yeah.
Buckshot, slugs, handgun rounds, rifle rounds, shoot through wall material, shoot through clothing, into ballistic gelatin. See what happens. Ballistic gelatin mostly because it'll capture the round, show penetration, show expansion. Not necessarily because it's exactly the same as soft tissue, but it'll give you a good idea what's going to happen. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Test your carry ammo and see what's actually going to happen when it starts impacting. That's your Red Wire Gear moment. Brought to you by RedWireGear.com. Right? Make sure you check them out. All kinds of goodies. All right. Our topic today is kind of in line with a lot of what we just talked about, is the myth of the average engagement and the concept of you won't need that.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
First things first, and man, there's just so many places to go with this. Prepare yourself for epic rant status. All right. There's so many places to go with this. I want to precursor all this kind of stuff. If that's the right word, I don't know, but I want to say, all right, before we get started, that what I'm about to say is based on my lane of experience, training, and understanding. Okay. A lot of people want to talk about our instructors, or they want to know, or they want to ask about our instructors, you know, various experiences in the military. They're all neato, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's all what we did.
Not what we do.
What we do now is I'm a dad. That's my big job. That's what I do every single day. Yes, I still train. I shoot competitively. I hunt, hike. I do all that cool stuff that I do. But I'm a dad and a husband. That's my main job, right, to take care of my family. I've spent the last decade of my life doing nothing but studying that.
Yeah.
Application lethal force, combatives, gunplay, gun craft, survival, medicine, everything. Every day of my life for the last decade, almost, right at, has been spent doing only that.
Mm-hmm.
In the military, this is not what I did, right? Mostly, it was work a job, all right, and then go home.
Yeah.
You know, that's mostly what it was, right? When you weren't forced to not be home because you had to go other places, it was go home when you're done. That sums up the majority of our training staff from independence training. Now, of course, we have some guys in our training staff who have amazing experiences. They were part of SOCOM units. They spent a lot of time. They have tons of deployments. They have tons of great experience in the military. And so they certainly have a good lane to draw from as well. So that's very important. But that's still what they did.
Yeah.
Because they can't be a sniper team leader now.
Yeah.
That's not what they do now. Now, that guy's a husband and a business owner.
Mm-hmm.
And a competitor and a hunter and an instructor for us and all that kind of stuff. But he goes to Walmart and he gets gas at a gas station. And so his average engagement or what he's trained for has definitely shifted and changed over the years. And it's the same thing with all of us, right?
He might have reference points, but what he was training for then were situations he was going into. Now, if you were to try to train for the same situation, it's not necessarily applicable to...
He's a lot more reactionary now,
yeah.
Right? He's at a gas station. He's got to be reactionary to what other people do to him. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, he's got to set those trip wires way out there, and he's got to see people coming and all that kind of stuff. But that's very different necessarily than what he does now. So I think that's an important thing to mention before we go in here about our concept of the type of average engagement we're going to get involved with here. Because if you're a cop, you're an active duty military or something like that, what we're about to talk about is going to be a little different for you. Because your average engagement might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
What you're training for is going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to say that what we're going to say isn't going to be applicable. It's just going to be different.
Right.
All right. So here's some things I've been thinking about over the last couple of days as I thought about this topic. First of all, I think people spend way too much time thinking about their gear.
I don't know.
when you look at...
How dare you?
I know. I know. That's about to get very racy around here, okay? Very, very, very big deal, very bad what I'm about to say. But I think people spend too much time thinking about their gear. When you look at, quote unquote, the average engagement, which doesn't really exist, but when you look at the average engagement and what people get themselves involved in for self-defense, home defense, even combat situations overseas or law enforcement shootings, what's rarely taken into account is how much money they spend on their shit. Mm-hmm. All right. Maybe ever. I mean, you may look at a series of engagements, let's say in Afghanistan early on. The problem that we were having with the 5.56 was distance. Mm-hmm. Went into a theater of operation that required longer range shots. And the M4, it's, you know, 14 and a half inches, was struggling with the M855. It was just not what we needed it to be, right? So then you started looking at longer barrels, different cartridges, 77 grain, MK262, stuff like that. You started looking at, designated marksman, revitalizing the old M14 and turning it into the EBR, the enhanced battle rifle, shooting a 7.62x5.1, reaching out and touching people a little bit better. Because we could look at an average engagement and say, well, this isn't working based on this caliber, based on this piece of equipment. All right. You're also looking at a lot of engagements to look at there.
Yeah.
And specifically going into this environment. Mm-hmm. But when you hear about someone shooting themselves, another thing I heard on the news today was a mom last night shot her girlfriend's ex-boyfriend right here in Phoenix because he came into the house, he wouldn't leave, and then he started assaulting her, and so she pulled out a gun and shot him. Hmm. He was in her home, Castle Doctrine, mm-hmm. whatever, right? I'm not there just to figure out whether or not it was justified. Point is, what they didn't mention was the caliber, mm-hmm. The type of handgun. How much she paid for it, what kind of newfangled cool rounds she mm-hmm. was shooting. None of that was really a factor necessarily in whether or not she was able to accomplish the task. Now, I'll tell you this, she didn't kill him. That we know. All right. So I think people – let's go back to that for a second. Why didn't she kill him? Because she fucking sucks at shooting. All right? Period. And she probably had never been in a violent confrontation or any simulated violent confrontation before. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the type of training that you're doing, all right, or you think about the type of equipment that you're carrying, I think it's important to be a lot more realistic about what you're going into. People will often ask me if, wow, you carry a med kit with you everywhere you go? You bet. Everywhere yep. I go. I have for years. Years, everywhere I go, some kind of med kit, usually my AFAC from Riker Nylon Gear, typically. And you go, wow, that seemed kind of over the top. Says the guy with a, Glock 19 on his hip and a backup magazine, total 32 rounds or whatever, plus a jacket at hollow point and a truck gun in his car in case jihad breaks out or whatever and he needs to slay some armored bodies. I'm not saying don't carry a truck gun, because sometimes I carry a truck gun, all right? Sometimes you're damn right I carry a carbine. When I'm traveling on the road, I'm going to carry a carbine because of the conditions and situations I'm potentially going to find myself in. Would I love to carry a carbine everywhere I go? Sure, but it's hard to make sure it's secured. It's hard to make sure it's locked up. Man, my truck's been broken into before. The last thing I would want is for somebody to be able to break into that truck and walk away with a freaking carbine.
It's like, oh, damn.
Yeah, and so it's like, no, that's – I got to be very careful about that kind of stuff. So we have to think about what we're more realistically going to be involved in. All right. So let's talk about this whole average engagement thing. Mm-hmm. From a standpoint of carrying a medical kit, right? What's your likely average situation? All right. In our training, we teach a lot about bleeding control, breathing control, right? What mm-hmm. we call BACON, breathing or bleeding and airway control, BACON. Mm-hmm. Taking it from the Stop the Bleeding campaign of BACON, bleeding control, we decided to make BACON or BACON, which is bleeding and airway control. So when you're dealing with bleeding and airway control, what's the likelihood that the person you're going to come across is going to be traumatically hemorrhaging?
Not likely.
Not very likely.
No.
So why do we still carry tourniquets?
Because?
Because if they are, they're going to die if we can't stop it.
Yeah.
All right. What's the likelihood you're going to deal with a penetrating chest trauma?
Not likely.
Not likely. So why do we carry chest seals?
Because if it happens.
If it happens, we really need it. And Dave and I know from both personal experience, education and training, and the study of real-world situations, that improvised tourniquets and improvised chest seals fail more than they succeed. And so because we know that there's such a high failure rate in improvised equipment, we want to carry pre-made equipment.
Yeah, makes life easier.
Makes life a whole lot easier. But what's more realistic that you carry with you in your, you know, I know you have an AFAC as well. What's more realistic that you carry in that thing that you're probably going to use?
The Sharpie.
Sharpie?
That's probably the most commonly used thing I'll carry.
I would say my little 4-inch wound stop bandage, because I can use it as an ace. I can use it as a gauze. I can use it, you know, I can cut it open, pull the gauze out. I have gauze. Use it as an ace bandage. Bandage up a minor bleeding wound.
Yeah.
You know, my hemostatic, I carry one of the small advanced 2-foot clotting gauze.
I did use that recently.
So. Don't have to have it for traumatic. Yeah, you use yours on a softball field.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Tape, gloves, my Sharpie. Those are the things I'm probably more likely to use than anything else.
Yeah. Right?
Sorry, guys, if you're watching our show and it's kind of fading out, I don't know what the hell's going on with our internet. CenturyLink blows goats. That's what the problem is. So, you know, you look at situations like that, you go, all right, what's more realistic I'm going to carry here? I'm still going to carry this other stuff, but I should probably in my normal kits, you know, people ask me, well, how many tourniquets should I carry? One for you and one for someone else.
Yeah.
If I am with my kids, I carry like a TK4 because it's going to work better for my kids.
Yeah.
My kit is not full of tourniquets. I have a couple tourniquets in my kit. I'm not going into a battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If I show up in a mass trauma situation or a mass casualty situation, I'm going to use what I have and I'm going to do my best with the rest.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to try to pre-pack a stomp bag and carry it around with me in my truck all the time. That's me. My likely scenario is vehicle accidents.
Yep.
I've dealt with a lot of vehicle accidents over the years, not professionally. All right. Just I used to travel. I still travel a lot on the road, but for about several years there, I was traveling up and down one of the major freeways in Arizona along one of the most dangerous corridors of that freeway. And I was doing that twice a day, 3 to 5 days, or sometimes more every single week. Usually early in the morning and late at night. Right? Mm-hmm. So it was like when the worst possible times, the worst possible location. I probably dealt with a vehicle accident. I mean, no shit. It sounds insane, but probably twice a month.
I believe it.
Most of them were not life-threatening wounds.
No.
Couple penetrating traumas. One really awesome compound fracture. One nasty bleed. But I wouldn't say catastrophic. Didn't apply a tourniquet, was able to control with, you know, pressure and bandaging. So all those vehicle accidents I dealt with all those years, I mean, we're talking dozens of times I had to stop and help people or saw an accident happen in front of me. And usually totally non-big deal. People got hurt. They got banged up. They got busted around. But I never rarely pulled out my first aid kit. Thing I use the most, gloves.
Yeah.
Because I don't like touching people. I don't know if they're bleeding. Most of the time I use gloves. And 2x2s and 4x4s and tape.
Yep.
Use a lot of that.
That's why I have a lot of it.
Yeah. And my truck kit got a lot of 4x4s, got a lot of 2x2s, got a lot of rolls of gauze because rolls of gauze
acrylic.
Are super handy for all kinds of stuff. Ace bandages, use a lot of ace bandages to help people just stabilize because a lot of times since that corridor of the freeway is very remote, it takes a long time for people to get there. And that corridor, about halfway through, breaks county lines.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have two different counties sometimes responding or agencies from two different counties. You might be right on the line, and you'd be like, but that agency's closer than me. It doesn't matter. This agency, technically, that's your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So you end up with that kind of stuff. So sometimes, I mean, I've been there for 45 minutes before, just waiting, hanging out with patient, you know?
Yeah.
My point is, that to me is more realistic. Now, can my kid cut themselves in the backyard and bleed out? Yes. You know, you read, we posted a story up on the Independence Training Facebook page about a kid who stabbed himself with a pen. I can't remember, or a pencil. It was Missouri or something like that. Mm-hmm. Went right into his brachial artery.
Yeah.
And damn near bled out. Tourniquet saved his life.
What are the odds?
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens. So we should prepare for those things.
Mm-hmm.
We should also make sure that we're spending enough time preparing for some of the minor wounds as well.
Mm-hmm.
How do you properly bandage somebody?
Yeah.
What are some of the other tools that I should carry in my boo-boo kit? Maybe not my trauma kit around my ankle. That's for major, oh my gosh, I need this right now trauma, but how can I handle this with a boo-boo kit? You know, I can go back to my truck and get some more 2x2s, 4x4s, et cetera.
Yeah.
All right. Same thing with gun-related situations. You think about your average engagement. It's so often talked about the rules of threes, right? It's going to happen in less than 3 seconds. It's going to be inside of 3 yards, and you're going to fire, you know, an average of 3 shots. Well, if we looked by that rule of averages, then I would say, okay, I'm never going to train further than 3 yards away. Mm-hmm. So it's going to all be close contact. That's all I'm going to do. I'm only going to practice to do 3-shot strength, pop, 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 right? From the high retention, mid retention, full extension, I'm only ever going to do 3 round shots three round shots, that works. And I'm going to practice to do it as fast as freaking possible. My sub-second draw is going to be important. All this stuff's going to be important. And then I'm going to take that and I'm going to pressure test it. And I'm going to do it close quarters. I'm going to work with UTMs. I'm going to do force on force. I'm going to work with other people. I'm going to vary the types of targets I use. I'm going to use 3D targets, 2D targets. I'm going to do a dry. I'm going to work in some combatives. Like, that's all I'm ever going to practice for.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be freaking lethal
at that
inside of 3 yards.
Engagement range. Yep.
Take those same people, and I know for this for a fact because I see them come into training, and I know these folks have only ever trained super close, and they come to our defensive handgun class, and we put them back at 20 yards. They may as well just take their magazine, strip all the rounds out in their hand, and fucking throw them at the target. They have the better chance of hitting. You know what I mean? So they've never really practiced.
Yeah.
At 3 yards, guys, you don't need great fundamentals. It literally is index shooting. You are mm-hmm. literally point shooting. It's mm-hmm. not that hard. Sights, people are like, well, what do you see at 3 yards? Fast. I see fast. I see shit I need to shoot, and then I shoot that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Sights are definitely there, but they're more of a suggestion than a yeah. hard and fast rule because it's not that hard to hit stuff at 3 yards.
Yeah.
Now, I can miss at 3 yards. Don't get me wrong, right? We show that in close contact handgun. It doesn't take much, but if I have good hip alignment, I have good posture, I've done my job to physically control who I'm engaging, and I can get my gun into play, and I can keep my hips squared up, yes, I'm going to get some hits. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact I'm going to get hits because I've pressure tested the hell out of it.
Yep.
But it's also important to go back to 25 yards and be able to make that pistol shot. What if you need to do that? Small percentage hits. How often are you practicing small percentage hits? And I'm not just talking about shooting hostage takers in the head.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's I'm in my home, it's me, my underwear, and my pistol,
mm-hmm.
and I am going to check on my kids. They're scattered around the house. Maybe they had friends over and they're watching movies or something. So I know I got kids downstairs, I got kids upstairs, and I got to go check on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
As I walk downstairs, I see someone in my house and they duck behind, I don't know, a doorway, a piano or something like that. And all I can see is their foot. And I know that they're uninvited in my house. And I got kids scattered all over the place. I'm going to shoot that motherfucker's foot. Now, I don't care.
I'm not going to ask him questions.
I'm not going to start talking. The verbals are going to come in a second.
Yeah.
But I'm going to decrease his capacity right now. He does not belong, or she, they do not belong.
Mm-hmm.
And I have too much at risk. If I'm at home alone, I might not shoot his foot. I may get a good barricaded position, call the cops, hold him at gunpoint, say, dude, you step out of there. I'm going to smoke check you now. So you better understand that's what's going to happen. You stay right where you're at. You stick your hands out. You show me you got nothing in those hands, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I actually keep a very special type of grenade. It's not an M79 frag grenade, okay? I wish. I actually have a less lethal stinger ball grenade. Doesn't matter how I got it, all right?
And, don't ask a question.
And I would love – it's like my dream. This is my sick fantasy, right, to trap someone in a closet and throw that shit in there. Slam the door. Boom! Ah! You know what I mean? Like, that's what you get for breaking in my house.
Real question. What if they identify as one of your family members?
Doesn't matter, man.
We'll get political.
Doesn't matter. I have family members that I don't recognize as family members. So if you identify as a family member, it's probably not going to work out very well for you. Anyway, my point is, like, how often are we taking the time to practice small percentage hits? Not just headshots, but just small percentage hits. You want an easy target, simple target, take your target frame out there, put an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper on there, take a can of colored spray paint, paint a couple tiny little dots, just one spray, one little tiny dot, and shoot that.
See, I think the issue is people don't think they need to train for it because they don't have anything to apply in their mind immediately.
Sure.
If you carry a gun, okay, it's probably a good idea. Think of it in a self-defense situation like you mentioned. If all you do is compete, okay, maybe you want to engage long range targets to decrease your time. Think of how it applies. It'll apply on all fields and it's good to practice, but don't just limit yourself to what you know or what you see on social media or whatever. And it applies. And I know we're focusing more on the self-defense side, but I started practicing longer range shots with my handgun when I was doing hog hunting in Texas. Cause if I had one of those bastards or damn it, if I had,
you can't correct bastard by saying, damn it.
If I had one of those things charging me, I wanted to be able to make decent hits from long ways away. Cause I mean,
when those things get up close, they get ugly.
They're very violent.
Yeah, they're horrible. And so that's where I started going, okay, I need to make sure I can make at least a 20-yard shot pretty accurately with this thing. And I don't know, you just got to find where it applies, and then you can start relating it to whatever, like self-defense. If you carry a gun, thinking of all self-defense situations, it's not paranoid. It's called preparation.
Sure.
I think that's the biggest issue. You see the guys, like you mentioned, they think you're ridiculous for carrying a med kit. It's going, okay, because I realize that sometimes this stuff can happen. It's the same reason you carry your truck gun, is because you think, you know, I may never have to deploy this because jihadi's coming over or whatever. But you're carrying it because what if it happens? Then I'll be prepared. Why not apply that to all aspects?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, there's also the issue of, you know, you kind of mentioned the whole pigs are violent thing.
Yeah.
And that's a potential thing that you were training for. But so you recognize that pigs are violent. And mm-hmm. if a pig gets up on you, it's going to tear you up. You can tell a pig, a hog, to stop.
It's not going
to
stop.
You can tell a hog to back up. You can tell a hog you have a gun. You can tell a hog you're going to kill it.
They don't care.
You can tell a hog anything you want. And if it's hell-bent, it's already predetermined its course of action, and it's coming mm-hmm. for you. It ain't going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
People somehow don't think that violent criminals that are humans act the same way. They think, oh, they're reasonable like me. They're logical like me. We saw it in Close Contact Handgun. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who got murdered in that class got murdered for one simple reason. Sometimes it was a straight up murder, all right? And there wasn't a whole lot they could do about it. And that sucks. Most of them ended up getting shot or stabbed or ended up in what we refer to as the slugfest, where everyone's guns come out and everybody gets shot, which is not a win situation.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them ended up in those kind of bad situations because they allowed a person to get too close to them for too long.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. Hey, back up. Hey, I said back up. Hey, you stop. Hey, back up. How many times?
Yeah.
Are you going to say that? I mean, we've got it all on video, right? We video it and then we send it to the students and they go, oh, I didn't say that. The hell you didn't. I got it on video. And when you see it, you're going to be like, damn, I can't believe I said stop 6 times. I can't believe I told that person to back up 4 times. I can't believe I told that person to back up while I was backing up. All failure points, right?
Yeah.
Well, of course, then you got stabbed or shot or whatever. Yeah, you got stabbed 3 times before you even knew what was happening.
Yeah.
Because you let that person close within arm's reach and you're begging them to stop.
Yeah. At that point,
the issue we see with most people is they don't get violent enough fast enough. Now, you take those same people and you put them on a shooting range, which we had just done, mm-hmm. right? Close Contact Handgun, we do a half a day in the gym where we teach the verbals and the movement and all scenarios with no guns involved, just handling yourself without a gun. And then we go into the next day, we do live fire, close contact stuff. And then we do scenario-based training for like 4.5 hours that's just the stuff we did the night before, combined with the guns.
Mm-hmm.
And we use dummy guns, blue guns, and as well as UTM stuff. So there's a penalty for failure as you get further along in the scenarios. And so you watch people on the range. Damn good shooters. Damn good shooters. No problem with shooting. The choice, however, to make that choice, to go to actual guns, to go ahead and get this person off of them, is really the thing that tends to lack in this environment. And so the issue that starts happening here that we see in training, that we see in people's mindsets and their idea of the average engagement, is they set themselves up on the range for success against compliant, non-competitive targets.
Yeah.
Thus, anything you do works. Anything you try, you can try the most asinine tactical pirouette, speed rock while running around faggotry style, blazing glory, dump, mag dump, sub-second draw time. Have I covered all the gay Instagram shit yet? You can do all that stuff against compliant, non-competitive targets, and nobody or nothing will stop you.
Yeah.
And you can hit big old steel targets, bing, lightning fast, and time it. Check out that shot timer time, y'all, fucking fast. All right? You can do all that kind of crap as much as you want. And that is a shooting skill, and that's good. Practice your shooting skills.
Yeah.
Take that and put it in an environment against competitive, non-compliant targets and see if what you've been doing actually works. If it works, good. Keep doing that and find ways to improve it. If it doesn't work, recognize that it doesn't work and move on. The biggest issue we see when we put people in these average engagement type scenarios in force-on-force classes is that they fail and then they make excuses for failing. Well, if he was going to pull a knife, I could see him pull a knife. Really?
Can you, though?
We did an example. I'm not that fast. I'm pretty fast. I train a lot, mm-hmm. all right? I'm not the fastest guy. I know that's for sure. We were doing a scenario. We had two guys who just would not get violent with each other. It was very different, very difficult to get them to, like, the good guy to be like, just do something, man. You don't have to pull your gun out, shoot him, do something physical to stop this person from encroaching in your space. Please stop. Please stop. I asked you to please back away. Hey, please back away. Hey, I said, please stop. I mean now. Like, dude, you can be as dad voice as you want. You're not going to stop them if they already have a predetermined course of action.
Yeah.
So we get to the point, the guy's like, well, you know, there's no lethal intent there. I go, okay, cool. So let's do the same scenario, only I'll be the bad guy and you'll be the good guy. So he's the good guy, and the bag stabbed him three times. Stabbed him three times with the, you know, not a real knife, obviously. Stabbed him three times. We close the distance. He's, please stop, please stop. And I'm like, hey, man, it's cool. I'm being cool. Like, hey, dude, I just want a dollar, man. I'm not really asking for that much. I'm just looking for a buck, dude. And then he touched me. He was trying to kind of fence me off a little bit, and he touched me. I'm like, you fucking don't touch me. You know what I mean? How dare you freaking touch me? And as he got so wrapped up in what I said, how dare you don't touch me? And I pulled the knife out from underneath my shirt and stabbed him three times, right in the rib cage. And he was like, crap. And I go, that's why you have to keep people away from you. We are not training you how to do benign engagements. You've already been, you do that every day, all day, benign engagement. You talk to people who don't mean you harm all day, every day. We're talking about dealing with hostile engagements. People who mean you harm, who continue to encroach, continue to get up in your business. Your verbal suck, your movement sucks, and your physical capability sucks. You can shoot the wings off a fly. We saw that earlier. You're a damn good shooter. But in this environment, your idea of what an average engagement is going to be is failing you. Because you think that because you're a nice guy, you're going to be able to convince people to not come at you, bro. Don't think that you know how other people are going to respond to what you do. All we can do is assume that it's always going to be the worst. Because that's when we're dealing with hostile engagements. Right? I'm not talking about regular, daily, benign engagements. We're dealing with potentially hostile engagements or absolutely known hostile engagements. How we react has to be appropriate. Forget all this crap about average engagements. There is no such thing as an average engagement. We try to put people in training in the most realistic scenarios. I've been put in training throughout my whole adult life. I've been put in various types of situations we consider average engagements, right? In the military, you go through, even when you're going through basic training, right? You're running around in your full kit and you go through the bayonet assault course and you're stabbing stuff with your bayonet, which isn't super realistic these days, but you're stabbing stuff with your bayonet. They're blowing up satchel charges next to you and people are yelling at you and gunfire's going off in the loudspeakers in the forest and you're running through and stabbing stuff and shit's exploding all over the place. That's a type of stress inoculation. I don't need to do that to my students today. They don't need that. They need to make these types of engagements. They need to talk to people. They need to get them to stop encroaching. They need to understand criminal behavior. They need to understand pre-assault cues. They need to understand why and how these things happen. They have to understand how to interact at realistic distances. I'm going to say 25 yards and in. I'm not saying they shouldn't practice beyond 25 yards, right? No. We can't go to average engagement. You end up with some crazy active shooter who's 50 yards out. And you got a clear shot with a safe backstop. You're damn right I'm going to take that shot. I know I can make that shot. I know that with my daily carry G19, I can make that shot. I know I can make that shot because I train to make shots like that. I'm not going to get 100% hits. But with a good enough backstop and a solid enough position, I'm going to get me some hits.
You can get some.
You know?
Make a difference.
So going back to kind of the whole violence thing for a second, I think the biggest mistake that people make when they're training for their quote-unquote average engagement is they spend too much time focusing on the gun. They don't spend any time talking about verbals or thinking or training with it. They don't spend enough time dealing with interpersonal communication. They don't spend any time studying criminals. That's icky. It's scary. It's scary to read reports of rape and murder and assault and how they did it and where these criminals came from and how they came from where they came from and why their mindset is the way it is and how they believe versus what I believe. I believe I'm right. They believe they're right. That's an important thing to understand going into this violent engagement. The same reason with, you know, we're fighting jihadis. They believe they're right. We believe we're right. The only way to change that is to change your religion. The only way to change your religion is to put some fucking 30 millimeter through their chest. All right? That's a great way to change people's religion. All right? You want to change the way they think about shit? Send them straight to Jesus, and that will change their religion instantly. All right? So there's sometimes only one way to deal with certain people. If they believe foundationally, wholeheartedly that they are right, and you believe foundationally and wholeheartedly that you are right, you find yourself in a violent confrontation with one of these people in the parking lot who goes, hey, man, I'm here to take your stuff, your family, your kids, your money, you, whatever. I'm here to take from you because I believe I'm right. I've earned this. This is my job. I deserve what you have more than you deserve what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, now, golly jeepers here, fella. Let's just talk for a second. It's not going to end well for you, man. This violent confrontation is not going to end well for you. So if you train for that average engagement of, okay, I'm going to go to the range. I'm going to set up this target. And at 5 yards, I'm going to blaze away on this guy. And I'm allowing shitty marksmanship. I'm shooting at giant steel targets.
Mm-hmm.
I run around like an idiot with range theatrics. I'm spend all my time, you know, doing crazy stuff on the range, training to multicam and all this. I carry concealed, but I never train from concealed.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think it's actually going to freaking go for you? What's the likelihood of ever finding out? That's the biggest reason I think that stuff like this is the way it is. Because most people will never experience this stuff in their life. And because they don't, most of what we do, realistically, most of what I do professionally is help people build confidence and help people have fun. They come to our classes, don't get me wrong, we're serious as a heart attack about what we teach.
Absolutely.
But mostly people have a good time and then they leave and they go, ah, it was fun and I learned some things. And they don't do anything with those skills. They don't go out and practice them. They typically don't go out. They don't compete. In shooting courses, they don't go out and try to get better in an actual shooting competition. They don't go out and test themselves. They're like, hey, I want to learn how to fight. And you go, okay, here's how you fight. Here's a 1 day class on fighting. And they're like, cool, thanks.
Now I know.
They don't go do a jits gym. They don't go box. They don't go throw down with anybody. They don't train with their family or friends. They don't go, hey, dude, let's go in my backyard and let's see what you got. Let's see what I got. 50% speed, right? I'm gonna break any arms today. They don't do that. They go hit a punching bag. We'll beat shit out of this punching bag. Yep. That's right. You will, because it's compliant and non-competitive. I'm not saying hitting punching bags is bad. That's where you got to learn your skill sets. That's where you learn how to effectively punch. But you can beat the hell out of a punching bag with crappy punches and then try to throw that on someone who doesn't want to get hit, and it ain't going to work so well. You can throw 10,000 shitty punches at a punching bag and master the art of the shitty punch.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And then try to go out and throw that shitty punch at someone who doesn't want to get hit. And they're going to reorganize your thought process real fast.
It's like that mentality. There's fundamentals to everything. There's fundamentals on how to hit somebody. There's fundamentals on how to play a sport, on how to shoot a gun, what have you. But you need to stress test those fundamentals, because that's when you need those fundamentals continue to work. I don't know, whether it's competing, whether it's just going, like you said, going to a gym and saying, hey, let's spar for a little bit. Let's do this. See if your fundamentals hold true when your mind is being thrown through a stressful situation. It applies to everything, not just shooting. We teach it with shooting a lot. That's one thing that we always say is, okay, now you need to apply stress, and we show people how they can do it. But whatever you have, it's awesome. Like hitting that punching bag, that's awesome. That's where you practice your fundamentals.
Got
to
do it.
But now you have to go see, okay, am I doing it right? Let's stress test this. Mm-hmm. Am I able to rethink and go back to those fundamentals? That's how the big competitors get good. That's how everybody in the top of their game gets good, is because they practice fundamentals and then they stress test them and they go, okay, it's working now. I need to get faster. I need to get stronger. I need to do whatever. That's just crucial.
And every skill set is perishable.
Yeah.
If we don't use it, it goes away.
Hmm.
The less we use it, the faster it goes away. So to kind of shift this conversation a little bit, we talk about, okay, so what do we need? What is an average engagement? What's a realistic engagement for us? So I train to shoot people, right? Mm-hmm. And targets, because I shoot competition as well. But I also carry defensively with that very intent purpose. All right. Do I train as much with my family? I'll say no. Mm-hmm. I need to. That's a weakness I have. Mm-hmm. I need to train more with my family. I train with my wife. I train with my oldest son a little bit. I need to train with him more.
Mm-hmm.
I need to train with my other kids more. I need to train them more on what to do in emergency situations without freaking them out or scaring them, because they're little kids. But I need to spend more time training with my family. That's something I need to do to make my training and my preparation more realistic. And I'm not just talking about shooting stuff.
Yeah.
I need to train them more on what to do in emergencies. I need to train them more on what to do in medical emergencies. I need to train them more on what to do in every kind of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do talk to them and train with them about what happens if someone comes up to you, what happens if someone approaches you in this condition or that situation or whatever. I need to do that more because it's not like I'm sitting there pressure testing my kids. All right, I'm going to get all gloved up and, you know, I'm going to try to grab you and you have to fight your way out of it. Like, maybe that's what I need to be doing because that's more realistic. My daughter, my oldest daughter, having to escape the clutches of some freaking perv weirdo is a lot more realistic than her having to gun someone down in our living room.
Yeah.
So way more realistic.
Yeah.
So that's probably what I need to spend more time training on is that. I'll admit that's my weakness. I need to spend more time training with that. I get really caught up in my own training because it's what I do all the time. I'm constantly at the range. I'm constantly shooting something somewhere. I'm hunting. I'm competing. I am constantly behind a gun. And so that's mostly what I spend time doing. But I'm not spending enough time maybe sharing that with the people that I love. That's something I know I need to do more of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you start looking at what's the average realistic situation, man. You can be dialed in as much as possible, but how dialed in are the people around you?
Yeah.
How prepared are they?
Do they know what you're going to do? Do they know how you're going to respond? We had those conversations. I mean, that's something I told you, my wife and I will talk about those kind of things, and she brings it up, and I don't even realize, wow, I haven't even expressed that to her. I know what I'm going to do, and I know what I'm going to do to get her out of the situation, but she brings it up and says, hey, what would happen if this happens? And I go, great. I haven't actually talked to you about that. It's a weakness. So there's always something to build. If you think you know everything or you're prepared for everything, you don't. You're wrong. And that's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's when complacency sets in and you see bad things happen. So doesn't mean you have to be super paranoid and prepared Russian paratrooper stuff.
Sure.
But don't always continuously learn. Don't think you know everything because you don't. And don't think what you know is the absolute perfect way to do everything. There's always multiple ways to skin a cat.
There's so many ways to do things. And so, you know, a lot of what I've said today has been kind of a little one-sided on the way we think about things and the way we train. So certainly don't think that the way we do things is the only way to do things or even the best way to do things. Like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, man, if you're law enforcement or military, or maybe your situation is just vastly different than ours. You live in a state where you can't carry a gun. Mm-hmm. You need to practice other types of defense. Find out what you can carry. Carry that. Train with it. You know, it's expensive to train with some stuff. Tasers. I love tasers. They're great. They're good for certain applications. When they're good, they're great. And I think they're an awesome tool. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of them. I use them in my life, and so does my family. That being said, they're not the cheapest thing, man. Every time I pull the trigger on that thing, it's like $30, man. You know, it's like, all right, let's train. There goes $100. You know, we each fired a round of taser and just dropped $100. All right, cool. You know, mm-hmm. it's way more than us going to the range and shooting, you know, ammo. We can get a lot more repetitions with ammo. So we make sure that what we're doing with the taser is a lot more specific. You know, it's got to be a lot more oriented. That's another thing I need to train in.
Yeah.
You know, I need to train more with that with my family. And we all have to recognize the realities of what we're going to be in for. What's a real, honest to goodness, serious emergency for my family? We live in Arizona and we live in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. The water gets shut off.
Yeah.
That's the most realistic. 32 rounds on my body, a body slaying badass.
It'll hydrate you.
Ain't going to help me get water. Unless I got to kill people with water, I guess. But like, other than that, right? It's not going to help me with water. But I have 12,000 gallons in a pool in my backyard. Mm-hmm. Do I have a filter for that? Can I filtrate that water to the point where it's drinkable or usable even for washing or things like that?
You have a reserve. Even people here in Phoenix, they have a reserve in their house that usually they don't know about. You have a water heater.
A water heater drain that
thing,
shit.
Yeah. That thing will hold a lot of water. And it's not going to last forever. And you have to figure out how to get it or what to do with it.
Usually have a spigot on. It's pretty easy.
But yeah, it's think about that, like especially here, like you said, what if the water gets shut off? What if everybody preps for power outage? That's why I have candles. That's why I have flashlights. Like think of all your basic utilities that you take for granted.
Absolutely.
You don't know. I mean, some people that go out hunting or camping, you realize, God, I don't have this. Like, lights are out. That's it. My flashlight's dead. Cool. Now I need to know. Or I need to bring an extra one or extra batteries. Okay, now apply that to your home. What if water goes out? What if electricity goes out? What if, I don't know, you have to barricade yourself in your house? Where are your access points? What if you have to get your family out? There's a fire. What are your exit points?
Can you get to all of them? Can your kids get to all of them?
Yeah.
Are they strong enough to unlock door locks? Are they tall enough to get out of windows?
Yeah.
Can they even open the window? You keep locks and stuff on your window. You know, if you're trying to keep a certain area secure or safe, can they get those things off? And they know how to break a window if necessary. Mm-hmm. Like all these things
nearby that, to do that. No.
How many people drive around? We were talking about this the other day, man. Me and Dave were about how many people drive around on the bottom half of their gas tank.
Ugh.
Look, it's cold for some of you guys out there. It's super cold. How many people are out there right now driving around in cold temperatures in snowy areas on the bottom half of their gas tank? They slide off the road and get stuck in the snow, and then they run out of gas. There's no heater anymore. In the middle of the summer here in Arizona, people drive around. Even now, it's freaking hot, man. It's Arizona. It's still like 80 degrees in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
You break down somewhere, and you need to cool off, especially when it's summertime. It's 115 out there, and you need to cool off. You can't run your air conditioner anymore because you're out of gas. I mean, this is simple. When we talk about average engagement, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about lethal force and all that kind of stuff. And I hope that this is kind of getting across to people in the sense of what is a real average emergency that you're actually preparing for? How many people spend all this time thinking about, should I get a Glock or should I carry an M&P or should I carry the new CZP-10 and what ammo should I put in it and what's the best round here and, you know, oh, what's the best holster and what's going to make – how can I wear the most tactical shirt or whatever, you know? How can I – you know, what kind of beard should I grow to appear to be the most operator or whatever? Like, they're so concerned about things like that that they – and yet in other aspects of average engagement, the real actual no-joke emergencies that they're likely to find themselves in, medical, water, fuel – income, how many people keep actual extra cash? Even if you don't have a lot of extra cash, how many people keep extra cash in small bills in their safe?
Yeah.
So if I got to go down to the store and the power's out and they can't take a, you know, they can't take a credit card and they can't break a 20, if all I got's 20s, looks like this bottle of water cost me 20 bucks.
Yeah.
You know? So how many people can prepare for realistic actual emergencies versus how many people debate what's the best truck gun?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
We're out of time. I wish we could rant more.
You wish you could rant more.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm finding more opportunities to rant today, I'm sure. But if you disagree with us or you agree with us or you think we missed something really important, email us. info@trainingaz.com. We're happy to get your emails. We absolutely really do honestly love engaging with our listeners. We really do. This show has been an important part of our lives. It's 3 and something years now that we've been doing it. It really is important to us. We don't just do it just for funsies. We really do it to spread education and hope that what we say means something to people. If you agree, disagree, think we missed a point, whatever, email us. We're happy to have that conversation with you. Hop on our Facebook page and leave us a comment. We're happy to address that as well. Send us a message. A lot of you guys send us Facebook messages every week, and we love responding to them. We really do honestly love it. And passionately, emotionally, we love it. We enjoy education. That's why we're in what we do. Same thing with your patrons who are $10 and above. Make sure especially you guys get on those polls that Dave put up there. Send us your mailing address so we can get your swag stuff. And also make sure that you let us know what the best time and place is for you guys to do an extra show every month so we can get that done. And if you're a patron in general, please, definitely you of all people should be – asking us questions and asking our opinions on things. And, you know, you're trying to figure out what red dot to buy. You're trying to figure out, you know, what pistol to buy. You're trying to figure out what med kit to buy. You're trying to figure out what water filter to buy. Ask us. We probably know. We have a whole bunch of instructors and a whole bunch of great resources we can tap into that you may not have access to or just not have as easy access as we do. So please ask us. We're happy to help out as much as we possibly can. Email us. Drop a line on our Facebook page on the Arms Room or Independence Training. And remember to jump on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube and check out Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, and, of course, the Arms Room Show. At Independence Training, we just released two really good videos that should be pretty interesting to you. One was a 35,000-round accuracy test with our Psionics Patrol Rifle Zero after never cleaning it. And finally, we busted a trigger. It was not a Psionics trigger. It was an ALG trigger. And we finally put it past its limits at 35,000 rounds, which is more than reasonable, right?
Yeah.
And we also put up a video where our very own Dave here gets stabbed by our very own John, who's not here today, and then has to apply some self-aid with an AFAC. So just some more things like that, more videos we're going to be putting out like that in the future. So make sure you check that out. And next week, we are going to have Nils Jonasson from ASIM Ammunition, our ammunition kind of handgun ammunition brand of choice specifically. He's going to be in the studio with us talking about how to select the right ammunition, how to kind of read through some marketing stuff, what you're looking for in commercial ammunition, maybe some stuff to stay away from, how we decide the kind of ammunition that we want. This is a patron requested show, as was today's, as was last week, et cetera. So if you're a patron, remember, we take your show requests seriously. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Make sure you check out the other shows. They're on Heroes Media. And until next time, have a happy Thanksgiving and a kick-ass celebration of friends and family and gratitude. Stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.